Chapter 16. Sunday, June 23rd, 1776. A report prevails here that a most vile, deep-laid plot was yesterday discovered at New York. I have not been able to ascertain the particular facts. However, 40 persons are apprehended and secured. Among them is the mayor of the city. What baseness are our enemies not capable of? Who would wish to be connected with a people so destitute of every virtue? God forbid it should ever be the fate of America. Letter of Congressional Delegate William Whipple to Joshua Brackett. Ruth fell asleep quick that night, my arms around her. I had washed out the blood from her kerchief and hung it to dry. There was a lump on her head, but it would go away. Madam's threats would not. I slowly pulled my arm out from under my sister. She sighed and curled into a tiny ball. I had pondered the problem all day and half the night. No matter how many times I turned it round, I found the same answer. We had to flee the city. I sat up and pulled the blanket over Ruth, tucking it under her feet to keep them warm. The wings that could spirit us away were hidden in the master's desk. I had to take the list. It would buy us our freedom. But Bellingham would not listen, not after the incident with the linen chest. I had to deliver it straight to the army. The sound I had been waiting for broke through. The low roar of Master Lockton's snores, starting up just as the grandfather clock chimed midnight. I put on my skirt and made my way to the bottom of the stairs. The hour was upon me. 'Twas time to act. The moon was my friend. It lit up the library enough for me to make my way without stumbling into anything. The snuff jar stood on the corner of the desk. I held my breath as I lifted the lid, put my hand inside, and slowly pulled out the keys. I crouched behind the desk and examined them in the moonlight. Only one was small enough to fit into the top drawer's lock. I inserted the key and turned it gently to the right. There was a dull clunk. The drawer slid open a hair. I forced myself to remain still and count to 20. Lockton's snores continued above, regular as waves crashing against the side of a ship. I pulled open the drawer and peered inside. It was crowded with abandoned quills, a rusty tinderbox, and a few coins and pound notes, which I was sore tempted to take. I felt through the drawer with careful fingers. What had he done with the list? Was it in his coat pocket? I reached into the back of the drawer and pulled out a black hair ribbon. Had he given it to Gold Buttons for safekeeping? There! From the farthest reach of the drawer, I pulled out a single sheet, folded once. I held it up to the light and quickly read. It was a list of names with the mayors at the bottom. He had titled it, Committee to Preserve the King's Peace. I tucked the paper in my pocket, tied it tight, and slipped it under the waistband of my skirt where it could not be seen. I closed and relocked the drawer, then carefully returned the keys to their hiding place. I tiptoed back through the house and slipped outside, quiet as a ghost. The air was hot and dripping, as if the city were wrapped in a wool blanket just pulled from a boiling pot. I made my way along the street, seen only by cats, rats, and a slave hurrying by with a bundle on her head. Since she carried a lantern, and no doubt had a pass from her master, she was allowed to be out walking after dark. I was not. The woman said nothing as she passed by me, but started singing the second verse of Yankee Doodle in a strong voice, which I thought curious indeed. I listened close to the words. Father and I went down to camp, along with Captain Gooding, and there we saw the men and boys, as thick as hasty pudding. She was sending me a message. I dove behind a log barricade just as two soldiers turned the corner, talking intently to each other and sweeping the street with their eyes. I said a quick prayer of thanks to the singing woman for her help. When the echoes of the soldiers' boots had vanished, I moved on, staying away from the lights of the sentry fires, passing under the dark shadow of King George's statue in the bowling green, and hurrying to my destination. The battery was the fort at the southern tip of the island, with high walls and cannons that pointed over the water to discourage enemies. It was headquarters of the Patriot Army in New York. Even if General Washington was elsewhere, here I could find an officer who would understand the value of the list. I marched past the rows of tents set up on the grounds outside of the fort, trying very hard to ignore the men and boys who stared as I walked by. As I neared the gate, a sentry stepped out and blocked my way. "Do you have a pass, girl?" I swallowed hard and tried to remember the name of the colonel who worked with Master Bellingham. Fagin, Jaden, McRaiden. "Well?" A few other soldiers drinking coffee outside of their tents had stopped talking to observe. "Please, sir," I said, polite and firm. "I've come with an urgent message for Reagan, for Colonel Reagan, sir." "Tell me, and I'll see that he gets it."
"I cannot," I said. "I must deliver it to him personally, sir."
"Who's your master?"
Telling a lie would not benefit me. "A loyalist, sir, who would beat me bloody if he knew I was here."
He looked me over and yawned. "Come on, then. I could do with a walk to keep me awake."
I followed him inside, past a room of men sleeping on the floor, along a hall to a small room where a low fire smoldered in the hearth, a chair drawn up before it. The moonlight had broke free of the clouds again and lay in gray pools beneath the windows. A table stood by the door where a heavy-set man scratched away on a piece of paper, his work lit by a half-dozen candle stubs that would soon burn out. The soldier drew himself up to his full height.
"This girl has a message, sir. Claims it must be delivered in person."
The man lifted a hand in the air and continued with what he was writing. I tried to make out what it was, but his scribble was dreadful bad. Finally, he laid down his quill, moved his spectacles high on his nose, and peered through them at me.
"What is it?"
he rasped. His voice sounded raw, like it had been run against a grater. An onion poultice was tied around his neck. I dropped in a polite curtsy. "I have information for Colonel Reagan."
"Who sent you? Who is your master?"
"I cannot say."
"Then who will vouch for you?"
I vouch for myself, sir. I'm new in the city, and I know only a boy named Corzin."
One caterpillar eyebrow lifted above the glasses as he recognized the name. "Bellingham's Corzin?"
He coughed loudly and sprayed drops of spittle on the page.
"He's all bluster."
He dipped his quill in the inkpot and continued to write.
"Take her away, Sergeant. I am too busy for this."
My escort grabbed hold of my arm.
"Come now."
I tried to break free. "Please hear me out." I shook my arm and twisted. "They want to kill him."